Pentagon has issued a final rule for dealing with counterfeit parts. Officials believe too many of them make their way into crucial electronic systems, threatening their reliability or compromising their security. Now, the rule has been a long time in coming. It affects both government buyers and industry suppliers. Joining us with the highlights of the rule, procurement attorney Joe Petrillo of Petrillo and Powell. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Tom and Emily.
All right, so let's start by asking you, what is the basic aim of this rule? Because it's pretty extensive.
Well, the aim of the rule is to have a new awareness and a system throughout the supply chain to keep counterfeit electronic parts from getting into defense systems. And the rule very clearly reaches throughout the supply chain all the way down to the lowest levels and needs to be included in subcontracts all the way through the various tiers. So that's the basic aim of the rule. It's a final rule that implements a proposed rule that came out about a year ago, and I think it's a pretty good improvement on that proposed rule in many ways.
And why is that? What does the final rule do that that one didn't do, or vice versa, what does it not do?
Well, it does a few things, I think, a lot more clearly. The crux of the rule is a contract clause that's going to be in prime contracts and then float on down through the subcontract tiers. And the original contract clause had a fairly unspecific and short list of things you had to do. This one improves on that in one way, in that the list is much more clear about what you need to do, it lays out the various steps you need to have in your program to stop counterfeit parts with more detail and more guidance. I guess the downside is, unfortunately, it looks like a list that was written by a committee where everyone's good idea got put in, even if it was similar to someone else's good idea, and no one looked at the whole to see whether you hadn't gone a little bit overboard. But in terms of guidance, it's much clearer and much better in that regard. In terms of structure, the original rule had some really complicated and troublesome definitions. Those have been removed, and instead the concepts that were in the definitions have been put in the list of things to do, which is really where they belong.
So can you give us an example of something that might have been overly specific that got more generalized from proposal to final rule?
Well, I think one of the things that helps here is the steps for determining who your supplier should be. And now there's a very clear set of guidance. You need to go to either the original manufacturer or a source that has express written authority from the original manufacturer or a design activity and get your parts from them. When they're not available, then you can go to the next tier with applicable counterfeit detection and avoidance systems.
Yeah, because if there's a company like, say, it's a Fairchild part or something, well, Fairchild doesn't exist anymore. Some of these companies, you know, or Signetics, I mean, there's dozens of semiconductor companies that have gone by the wayside. So this does give a way for people to get, I guess you'd call them PIN-compatible parts from those manufacturers, even though they're not around to certify anybody.
Right, and that's part of that's going to be part of your system for determining whether or not you've got valid or counterfeit parts. Another area that's helpful, I think, to contractors is that the idea of introducing knowing misrepresentation into the definition of a counterfeit part, so that there is an element of intent here that's helpful. Another area that's kind of interesting is that embedded software and firmware is now specifically included in the definition of a counterfeit part. So the part can be a genuine part, but it could have, you know, a bad malware could have been introduced into it, and that would make it counterfeit.
Can you explain what the knowingly misrepresentation clause is that you were referring to? I mean, it seems like if someone just says, "Oh, I didn't know it was a fake," is that a good defense?
Not necessarily, but there has to be a knowing misrepresentation somewhere in the process to make it counterfeit. I think that there was some concern in the original rule that items which didn't meet performance characteristics would be considered counterfeit, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. That's a quality control issue, not not an issue of whether or not the part is genuine. And that concept, I think, is, well, first of all, it got removed from this rule, and secondly, the knowing misrepresentation part, I think, takes care of that sort of innocent mistake becoming a counterfeit.
And there is a commercial reference, an SAE standard, and I can't think of the specific number of it, but it's something that in the commercial industry they reference all the time. And a lot of people in industry were hoping that DOD would bring that standard, that ISO standard, into its definition. Do we know whether that happened?
It did not happen. And standards are considered, are encouraged, contractors and subcontractors are encouraged to look to them to help put together their own compliance programs, but none of them has been established as a requirement or even as a safe harbor. So you could use that standard, and that would certainly...
It's AS6001, by the way, 6081.
6081.
Okay. Yes, well, AS6081.
I can't remember the number of, but they have a variety of, you know, those standards are encouraged, but, you know, you got to sort of think through your own situation in terms of what you're making and how you're organizing your supply chain and put together a system that makes sense for you.
And Joe, how would you trace, if you are a supplier to the Pentagon, but you get your supplies from lots of different places, is there guidance in terms to how to trace to make sure that something is in fact what it is supposed to see? Supposed to be, rather?
Right. That is a very interesting part of the regulation. I'm glad you brought it up. It is necessary to be able to trace every single part back to the original manufacturer, including certifications and traceability documentation. Some people have argued for using various marking techniques, such as plant DNA, and DOD hasn't required that or even suggested it be done. But you need to have some kind of really good marking system, a serial number system, or other system to trace back every part back to the original manufacturer.
All right, so getting to the agency, who is the responsible party for making sure this all happens? Is it the contracting officer?
In terms of the implementation of this, ultimately the contracting officer has the authority. But remember, this is a series of obligations placed upon the contractor. You're also going to have the folks who come in and review contractor purchasing system reviews looking at this as part of the process of figuring out whether or not the DOD, whether or not the contractor is meeting DOD standards. So that's part of the whole system here.
And what are the penalties if you are found to be in violation of this?
Well, obviously you've breached the contract, and there are contractual penalties for that. In addition, there is a requirement in the statute that continues in the regulation that the costs used to deal with suspect counterfeit parts or counterfeit parts are unallowable. So this is not a cost that the manufacturer is going to be able to pass along, or the prime contractor is going to be able to pass along to DOD or any of the subcontractors, for that matter, if they're on cost-plus contracts. I think one of the practical implications of all of this is it's going to make the whole process of running a supply chain more expensive, and there are going to be additional costs incurred by manufacturers and their subcontractors that, in terms of compliance at least, that's one that are going to be passed along up the chain to the DOD.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how big of a change do you think this is going to force manufacturers to make?
Well, you know, the statute that this implements was passed in the last day of 2011, and folks in the industry have seen this coming, and I think have been implementing various systems to try to protect counterfeit parts from getting in there to begin with, even before the regulation became effective. Now, we're going to have to look at those systems again in light of this new contract clause and regulation, but I think that should ease the process of transitioning over to the new system, because people have already taken some of the steps, at least in this clause.
And this, just to be clear, affects not just the parts manufacturers and their distributors, because that's a whole big, complicated supply chain in and of itself, but also people that make equipment using parts that's inside it, like the Ciscos of commonly cited, because they get counterfeited sometimes, their whole boxes. And so it's the systems manufacturers as well as the parts manufacturers?
Absolutely. Everyone up and down the supply chain. So if you... You know, if you're making a fighter jet or a Navy ship, you've got to make sure that every part in it meets the standard.